Good evening, everyone. I'm getting some feedback.
Ask Carlos or Paul to mute.
Carlos, he wasn't muted during the Randy's talk.
Ask Paul too.
Paul, can you mute? Yeah. Good. Well, hello. Again, welcome. It's good to see you. It's nice to sit with you. And so we keep talking about the crazy mind or the monkey mind. And we're right in the middle of a series of lessons talking about how to keep this going, how to sustain our practice. Because if we practice, it works. If we don't practice, we lose it. It's just that simple. So what have we learned so far about the crazy mind? Well, we know we're not our minds, thank goodness. We don't know where thoughts come from, where they come. We don't know from where they go. We know we're not our thoughts. And as we investigate the mind, we begin to see that it can't always be trusted. But there are some good things about the mind that we've talked about, and we'll continue talking about that. But it behooves us in this practice to really focus on what's going on inside has to be seen in order to have any kind of impact on our wisdom, on wisdom, building wisdom. So it seems like the mind seems to want both endless excitement and then peace. Nothing in between. And so instead of being served by our thinking, sometimes we are driven by it in many unconscious and unexamined ways. That's why we're looking at it closely in stillness, seeing it for the first time in a way that maybe we've not seen it before or that we even thought was possible. And as I say, thoughts can be useful. We can use them. But not if they dominate our experience. And we're all conditioned where that's exactly what they do, is they take over. They're pushy. And so we're interacting. We are witnessing the mind because it's so daggum opinionated. There's so much that we like and so much that we don't like and dislike self and others. You know, we just kind of act a lot of times like the universe is not quite doing it the way we want it to. If only I was in charge, and thank goodness, we're not. So we're just telling stories about our successes and our failures. We're planning our security, how to stay safe. Habitually remind us of who and what we think we are. And that's where the suffering comes in. Because again, the dualistic nature of thought is the root of all our suffering. And we have to see that for ourselves. We have to experience that for ourselves. And if we sit a number of times, then that insight comes. And any time we are trying to live our lives through our minds, instead of through the present moment, there's a separation. We lose our connection. And that's when fear and attachment comes up, and we don't really, until we start looking, know how that happens. But thank goodness, in studying the nature of the mind, then it no longer controls us. And so we can become walking, talking minds. Anand Tupten, a Tibetan teacher, says we can be the walking dead, because the walking dead is just conditioned through their conditioning, with the mind being in control. So we try to protect the self when we feel the separateness, this lack of connection. We feel separate and we feel like we have to protect ourselves from each other. And so we push things away. Always pushing things away. And you know, as you well know, the practice is about taking everything in. It's not pushing anything away. And that's radical. I always thought there were things I needed to push away. And I guess in some situations. But not pushing away who I am and living in the present moment. So, for a deeper healing of the conflicts of the mind, we begin to not identify with them so much. And that automatically, quite naturally, through nature, loosens us from them. We see them. We aren't them. And thank goodness these thoughts that come up, we think, holy moly, where do they come from? And it's pretty scary sometimes if we don't understand. We don't know from where they come. We don't know from where they go. And it doesn't matter. So letting go of our identification of the mind is a huge, huge step, huge insight. So to heal, we must learn to step back from all the stories that the mind's been telling us. And that's exactly what happens through the stillness, whether we want it to or not. We begin to see directly, experientially, what's going on inside. And the first insight for most of us, if not all of us, was a crazy, busy mind. And again, nothing's wrong with that, because we all have them. But we don't always know how to relate to them. We don't know how to relate to the spinning mind. And again, as I said earlier, it doesn't sound right, but it's like, oh, the busy mind, the spinning mind, the crazy mind. Because it is, even though it may not seem like that, it's calling for our attention. It wants, hey, here we are. Just like any emotion we have, the emotion wants our attention. And so when we place our awareness in the mind, then something shifts. There's a much clearer mind. And we begin to see we do have control over the conflicts and opinions that we tell ourselves. And as the Buddha said, I love this, people with opinions just go around bothering one another. I mean, isn't that the truth? In my opinion, you know, we know, we've been there. And when we see that the mind's very nature is to think, so we don't want to get rid of it, couldn't if we wanted to. But it's useful in that it divides, it plans, it analyzes. It can become clear. It can enhance it with the clarity of the mind. The six senses become alive, actually become in the present moment. And there's so much more, just so much more to it. So that's what we're trying to do, is get a grip on our mind. And we begin to step out of identification and begin to just watch and get to know our opinions and our judgments. Because again, we don't want to push those away. We're intimately getting to know these things about ourselves that we don't particularly like. But it doesn't matter whether you like it or not, because it needs for it to work as natural as it can. The mind, along with everything else going on, needs a release. We don't know how to do that. And so the mind thinks of the self as separate, but the heart knows better. And as we struggle with the minds and thoughts and all the things that we've been studying about the mind, Nisargadatta says, the mind creates the abyss and the heart crosses it. So what happens? Well, it's like clearing all the rubbish so that we can actually see the truth of life at any given moment and what is actually going inside. I thought Pema Chodron talked about, she's read in many meditation texts, about three levels of discursive thought. And see if this is true. She says, in the first level, we're just totally lost. It's just, we are gone. We are gone into those thoughts and that story. We're fantasizing. We're creating a virtual reality. And it's like, oh, I was just lost in thought. Well, again, nothing's wrong with that. But as we get to know these thoughts in this process, then we know what to do with it. So we come back from this wandering thoughts, and it's kind of like walking into a room after having left it for a while. Oh, wake up. We've been somewhere else. And so we know, we all get caught in those kinds of thoughts and caught in our stories. The second level, Pema says, is being gone. It takes us from the present moment, but not completely. We're maybe two or three sentences into our storyline, our thinking, but we haven't gone as deep as the first example that Pema talked about. Not completely there. And so We're drawn off sometimes with a sound, for example, and then the mind follows on the sound, or perhaps we're drawn off by the feeling of hunger and we start thinking about what to have for lunch. And we realize this quickly and we come back. And that's what we do in our practice. Come back. Come back. Come back. And the mind has this idea that more is better. Remember Ram Dass? I think it's in one of his books, but I know I've heard him tell this story about how we get stuck in more is better. And he says, "All right, let's take a bath, a nice warm bath." And he said, Let's add some bubbles. Let's add a little bit more to make the bath a little bit more than the bath can be. Oh, maybe we could add a little bit of wine. I mean, why not? And along with that, light a few candles. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if I could invite someone? Invite someone into my bath. So it's just like the mind is constantly wanting more. It's just out of control. And so more is better, keeps us in our minds. And so the third category of discursive thought includes thoughts that don't draw us off at all. It's these cloud-like thoughts that we have. And we're sitting and we put our mind on the object of the breath and we're staying with it. Then there's this little vague conversation or the in and out of thoughts that's happening on the side. But we know it. We know it. We're not quite so caught in the thoughts or the mind, but it doesn't draw us off. It's like we are a witness to on the side vague hint of thoughts, but we don't enter them completely. We're just not lost. The nice things about these thoughts is they're not as critical as these other thoughts where we get lost. You know, we spend a lot of time when we get lost in thoughts criticizing not only that the universe hadn't gotten it right, but we haven't gotten it right. And so it's important to recognize all of these levels of thinking, just to know them and to see if Pema knows what she's talking about. And to distinguish it from the kind of thinking that takes us away to the fantasies. The true nature of the mind, there's a Tibetan teacher called Orgyen Chöwen, and listen to one of his teachings, and he wrote a book that's called The Pristine Mind, and that's what he's talking about, the pristine mind. When we don't add all our stuff to it, the pristine mind is clear. There is clarity. That's why when we settle down into our meditation and we get quiet and still and the mind settles, wow, we see things that we can't or pretty seeing when the mind is in control. And so he says the mind we're all born with is this pristine mind. And we are most capable of getting in touch with that pristine mind. Because it's untouched and it's unspoiled by what? Well, by thinking of the past or thinking of the future. It's just right here, gathering all of us, the whole system, mind and body, in a clear way of seeing that helps us to see quite directly where we're causing our own suffering, which is most of our suffering. Is optional, doesn't sound right, but that's what we can find out. So I'm going to stop with that. Thank you for being good listeners, and now we're going to open it up to you. And I think we'll go around the room, Steve, and let people see who else is here in this room. I'm here.
So it's Randy.
Marion.
So here we are. This is the Sangha. It's truly amazing, isn't it?